Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Best of the Pigskin Dispatch's Football History Headlines, we discuss the 1925 NFL Championship controversy and the legendary football color analyst Howard Cosell on his birthday, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories, all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history, and of the Sports History Network, your headquarters of sports yesteryear. And boy, are we excited to be able to bring you football history once again on a day-to-day basis. Today, December 20th, is our day that we're going to talk about some very historic games that took place, some drafts, and some great Hall of Fame birthdays. But to get started, we're going to go back in time in the early NFL when it wasn't always as organized as the behemoth of the Shield is today. It was a little bit disorganized, and there was a lot of different teams coming in and out, and this next story is going to show a perfect example of that. So let's go to December 20th, 1925. An NFL title is stripped. The Chicago Cardinals, with an 11-2-1 record, win an extremely controversial NFL Football League championship title. Boy, does this story get deep in a hurry. On December 6, 1925, the Chicago Cardinals faced the other top-tier team in the NFL that season, the Pottsville Maroons. Pottsville's a small town about 85 miles northwest of Philadelphia. The first year in the league, the Maroons were on fire in the NFL, boasting a 9-2 record going into the Cardinal matchup. The Pottsville 11 were a gritty bunch made up of mostly coal miners around the area who had dominated the regional coal football leagues referred to as the Anthracite League. In 1924, a local Pottsville business owner, John Striegel, sponsored a team. According to a Penn State Library story on the Maroons, just before the first game of the 1924 season in the Anthracite League, owner John Striegel decided the team needed new jerseys and quickly ordered 25 of them from a local sporting goods store. Striegel told the store owner that the color was not important. The team was sent 25 maroon-colored jerseys, and they became known as the Pottsville Maroons immediately thereafter. The Maroons applied to play in the NFL for 1925 season, and a community footed the entire entry fee as they raised money for the NFL franchise costs. The Maroons were in for some stiff competition on December 6, as the Chicago Cardinals themselves entered into the December 6 game, posting a respectable 9-1-1 record themselves. The game was billed as the NFL championship of sorts when the two top teams squared off so late in the season, and remember, there was no formal title game in the league then, so it was the team with the best winning percentage who claimed the title. Pottsville soundly defeated the Cardinals in the game by the score of 21-7, and then won their final game to end the season with an 11-2 record. That should be the end of the story, right? Pottsville wins the 1925 championship. Unfortunately, in the drama that was the early NFL, this was not the case, and controversy was brewing nearby. Penn State site tells the story well. The Frankford Yellow Jackets were, in 1925, the top professional football attraction in the Philadelphia area. Frankford is about 7 miles northwest downtown of Philly. Earlier in the season, the Yellow Jackets had upset the Pottsville Maroons at home by the score of 20-0. Believing they were the inevitable 1925 champions, the Frankford team signed a contract with a Philadelphia promoter that allowed the best NFL team in Pennsylvania, whoever it might be, to play a non-league game against a team of former Notre Dame stars. The game would assuredly draw a huge crowd and would generate plenty of ticket revenue for the NFL champion. After the Yellow Jackets were beaten by Pottsville later in the season, they lost the right to play the Notre Dame Stars. When the Pottsville Maroons clinched the NFL title, they were eager to cash in on the exhibition game against the Notre Dame team. So instead of playing the Maroons at the Maroons' tiny home of Miners Park, the game was scheduled at Scheib Park in Philadelphia. Pottsville expected a large turnout and wanted a full house in a large stadium. Thereafter, a hard-fought and extremely tight game, Pottsville held on to beat the Notre Dame Stars by the score of 9-7. The Frankfurt franchise was miffed and probably a bit embarrassed and jealous that they were not the ones to play the Irish Stars and pocket the extra cash. Frankfurt protested to the NFL that the Maroons had violated the territorial rights of the Yellow Jackets by playing the game so close, and at the same time Frankfurt was playing a game only a few minutes away. The Jackets claimed that it took spectators away from their home game. NFL Commissioner Joseph Carr agreed with Frankfurt and their protests. Allegedly, Carr warned Pottsville three times prior to the game at Scheib Park with Notre Dame not to play the game. Since in Carr's eyes they ignored his direction, the Pottsville Maroons' NFL rights were suspended. They were fined $500 by the league and stripped of their title after playing the unsanctioned game. With Pottsville being eliminated in the standings, the Cardinals ended up having the highest winning percentage. Chicago, however, refused to accept the title, stating that without winning it on the field, they didn't want it. The NFL, however, recognizes the Chicago Cardinals as the 1925 champs. As we take a quick break from the headlines, let me remind you that you can also learn more about the gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone, here is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message for you.
Hi, folks. Are you curious about some of the unique players, teams, games, and events of pro football's past? If you are, please check out my bi-weekly podcast, The Pigskin Past. I'm Joe Zagorski, a member of the Pro Football Writers of America and the Pro Football Researchers Association. I've written three books about pro football history, and I'm currently writing my fourth. Now, my era of expertise is the 1970s in the NFL. Heck, I even have a Facebook page by that title, and my very first book also has the same title, The NFL in the 1970s. But every now and then I check out a different era, so I might surprise you. Anyway, if you like pro football history, please check out my bi-weekly segment here called The Pigskin Past when you get a chance. I think you'll enjoy it.
December 20th, 1980. NBC broadcasted a game with no announcers as they tried to be a little bit different. ESPN.com shares a story that, in fact, with the only sounds that the TV audience would hear at the game were the sounds that were heard by the fans in the stadium, the public address announcer, the cheers of the fans, and maybe, just maybe, a hot dog vendor or two. In a meaningless game, the 4-12 New York Jets defeated the 8-8 Miami Dolphins 24-17. December 20th, 1985, sportscaster Howard Cosell retires from television sports with ABC's network. On August 23, 1984, it was reported that Cosell had relinquished his job at broadcasting Monday Night Football for the network. The New York Times article on the subject tells how Cosell would still be the host of an ABC sports program called Sports Beat. Reports said that Howard was what he described as disenchanted with the whole football mentality. In an SI.com article, it was reported that Howard Cosell fulfilled his contract with ABC to be part of the MLB broadcast, and he allegedly did so reluctantly. On December 20th, 1985, after the baseball season, Cosell formerly retired with ABC, of whom he'd worked with for 20 years, and relegated himself to only broadcast on radio the rest of his working days. We've got some great big birthdays on this December 20th for Hall of Famers, and the first one is probably bigger than none other. December 20th, 1867, Minneapolis, Minnesota, William W. Pudge Heffelfinger, the legendary Yale Bulldogs guard, was born. The footballfoundation.org website bio describes Heffelfinger as being 6'3" tall and weighing in at 195 pounds. Let's put that size into perspective, because Cam Newton at quarterback is 6'5" and weighs 240. But in 1890, when Pudge played, he was a giant among his peers and was extremely athletic too. His size allowed him to destroy blocks and defenses of opposing lines, where it's said he would typically take out two or three players at a time. With his great athleticism and genius of Walter Camp, he is also credited with introducing the pulling guard play. The All-America selections originated in 1889 by Walter Camp, and Pudge was on the initial team, and he repeated in 1890 and 91, his last two seasons at Yale. Yale was a major football power during that era, and Pudge helped lead the Bulldog teams to undefeated seasons in 1888 and 1891, and one-loss seasons during the 1889 and 1890 campaigns. The 1888 team amazingly outscored their opponents 698-0 that season. The National Football Foundation welcomed the collegiate career of Pudge Heffelfinger into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1951. As great of a collegiate player that Pudge was, and that's exactly what Pudge was best known for, though. After college, Heffelfinger continued playing with independent teams, and on November 12, 1892, the Allegheny Athletic Association near Pittsburgh paid Pudge Heffelfinger the tidy sum of $500 to play just one game with them against their heated rivals, the Pittsburgh Athletic Club. The AAA with Pudge did win the game that day by a score of 4-0, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and Pudge Heffelfinger goes down in history as the very first known paid professional football player. December 20th, 1928, Sublette, Kansas. The stalwart safety from the Colorado State, Jack Christensen, was born. According to the ProFootballHallOfFame.com website, Jack had an awesome 8-year career in the pros with the Detroit Lions as not only a defensive back, but also as a respected return man. Christian was voted as the All-NFL in 6 straight seasons and played in 5 Pro Bowls and was even a top player in the league interceptions in 2 seasons. The 1970 Pro Bowl Hall of Fame enshrinement ceremony, Jack Christensen was one of the players that received a gold jacket that day. December 20th, 1942, Bob Hayes, the talented speedster wideout from Florida A&M, came into this world. The Dallas Cowboys used a futures pick in the 1964 NFL draft to select Hayes, but the Denver Broncos and the AFL did the same per the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website bio on Bob. Bob was given the title of the world's fastest human when at the 1964 Olympics, he took home 2 gold medals in track. Bob chose to play with the Cowboys, and he was voted as an all-NFL performer on either the first or second teams in 4 of his 11 seasons in the league. For his career, Hayes had 71 touchdowns and scored 7,414 yards receiving. In 2009, Bob Hayes was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. December 20th, 1965, Mike Gutley, the guard from Washington State University, was born. Mike was a consensus first-team All-America selection in 1988, and according to the footballfoundation.org website, is the most decorated player ever for the Cougars. Mike Gutley was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame by the NFF voters in the year 2016. We're sure thankful that you joined us today, and we'll hope you'll come back tomorrow for December 21st football history headlines, where in there we'll talk about the Chicago Bears repeating as champions in 1941, the last game for a legendary coach, and the Cowboys hired their first coach. It's all coming up tomorrow, so make sure you hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast provider, or join us on pigskindispatch.com or the sportshistorynetwork.com to catch all the action. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Just another ordinary day in the offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? a poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football, college basketball art, Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can too by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's ROW number one today for access to the full Row One catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.